The Elvis Cast with Grant Bench.
Today in the Elvis Cast, we're continuing our interview with fan club president Wayne Hawthorne. Towards the end of part one, we were talking about Elvis's popularity in Australia, and it made me think, did they hear a lot about rumours that Elvis would indeed be coming to Australia?
Oh, God. Have a look at the newspapers and magazines over the years, you know. Every second week somebody was... even when I went to the Elvis concert and got to meet Parker and spent time talking to him, and even at that time, now we're talking about 1976, late 76, and not long before we left, there was another story from some clown who, we booked the SCG and the MCG, you know, Elvis is going to be coming to Australia, and naturally I asked the Colonel about it, and but, you know, you had, going back to the 50s, you had Lee Gordon announcing, because Lee Gordon was involved with the Northwest Pacific tour there in 57, and... you know, Lee Gordon was talking about bringing Elvis to Australia. Well, I mean, because Elvis wouldn't fly, he went to Hawaii. People say, he went to Hawaii, why didn't he come on to Australia like Gordon wanted him to? Well, the fact is, have a look at the time on a boat in those days, or a ship in those days. Elvis had to get back to the States. King Creole was coming up. The Army, well, it was already gone as far as the Army's concerned. You're in. So there was no way known in the 50s that he could have come out here. Except, once again, in 57, when he went to Hawaii, if Elvis was flying rather than refusing to fly, that could have possibly even happened, because you're turning a couple of days into a couple of months. You know, with all the time it takes on a cruiser to get to Hawaii, then get to Australia, then back to Hawaii. Oh my God, yeah.
Did you make a decision in your own mind that if you wanted to see Elvis, you had to go to America? And when was the first time you actually went to America to maybe try to see him?
1976. I first went to the States in 71, and then 73, and then 76. But we were travelling around. We went to the States to see both my first wife and I had a thing about seeing every one of the 50 states. So in 71, we spent a month there, went back in 73 and spent 3 months there. By that time, we got to Alaska, kissed the ground. That was the nail in the coffin. We had finally got there. Alaska was the last one to visit. But look, if we had been in the right place at the right time, we probably would have tried to get tickets.
Yeah, I know reading back a lot of it that people weren't aware of Elvis being in concert until it was maybe in the newspaper and they're sold out 5 seconds later because people have lined up. And if you're not in that town, you're not going to know about it.
Well, that's right. We were travelling around in those days on Greyhound buses. However, I remember in, 73 in Vegas, picking up, menus. The Elvis concert menus.
Yeah.
They used to just leave them out on the table and you'd take as many as you like. So you walk into the International and there they are. So you just take three or four and bring them home.
Bring them home. Well, let's talk about that night in 1976, Wayne. How did it come about that you got to see him at the Cow Palace down the front?
Well, it was simply a matter of... one of our members, Hedy Drisson, wrote and said, look, I know you haven't seen Elvis yet. We've got tickets for the November 28 concert. Do you want to come? Let us know. So wrote back straight away, yes, sir, we're coming. Because we were saving money to actually go to South America, which I did, mind you, a couple of years later. But, okay, so we've got the big yes-a-rooney going, and all of a sudden, from, I think, about a $12 ticket, the cost had gone up to, I think, $100. But mind you, the Australian dollar was worth more than the American dollar, so it really cost around about $80 Australian. And she's gone, look, I've got a problem. We didn't think you'd say yes, so we sold the tickets. but she said, I can get you tickets, because she was working with the manager of the Cow Palace's wife was working with Hattie. So she bailed her out. Look, we had a great time anyway. So we arrived there. They got their $12 tickets. We got our $100 tickets. And so we've got J-Row, and they've got some other one. So we're walking around looking. Hold on. J-Row's in like a nine-seat private box thing on the side, stage high on the side. So, like, not at the back, but at the front. So you're looking at Elvis directly across where he's performing.
Right.
Okay? And all of a sudden, we've got Hattie's husband being sent down to say, well, excuse me, would you like to change seats? You know what the answer was?
I can only imagine.
Yeah, and Fred said, lovely guy. And he just turned around and he said, I thought you'd say that. And he said, well, like we explained, Fred and Hattie had seen Elvis that many times, it didn't matter. This was the first. We didn't know whether it'd be the last. Matter of fact, if Elvis hadn't have died, it wouldn't have been the last. But anyway, we said, well, no, I don't. So here we are in this. There were four of us in the front, and then there were five people behind. So there were nine of us in this basically cut-off box sort of thing. And, wow. That was it.
Now tell us about we'll ask you about, you know, that you had a chance to talk to the Colonel and other people there, but let's just focus on the concert itself for a minute. That moment when the lights went down and the 2001 theme, what was going through your mind?
Well, look, I mean, we were totally bored with the intros and whatever, and the comedians, and I mean, they were total, nobody was even interested in those prelims. And that's when Parker went past. I'm sorry, I shouldn't call him Parker. I actually like him. So the Colonel walked past and he sent one of the boys back. He wanted to have a talk to me. And that was to do with the T-shirt, as I found out. And we had a great talk. This is why, while the prelims are going on. And, you know, that was... That was fascinating, but when Elvis actually came out, finally, I actually got a better feeling for 2001: A Space Odyssey. Yeah, you can see it on a concert or whatever on film. When you were there, it was chilling, and once again though, it was when he walked onto the stage, and we didn't know what to expect because there had been rumours that, you know, he had deteriorated and whatever. All of a sudden, I mean, he's walked out, and because Linda Thompson was standing in front of us, so she was on ground level, and he's walked, and he's looked around, and he's looked down towards her, which means he's looking at us, and the beaming smile on his face, and it was almost as though 2001: A Space Odyssey Well, it was more like 1976, A Space Odyssey. I mean, it was just, it was magic. And for the rest of the show, and I know I've been over this with you many times, that show was absolutely sensational, and we'll never, ever forget it. And one of the great things was, and I've said it over and over again, one of the best things was the joy that Elvis got out of that concert. He was on top of the world.
Another story I like that you tell is when he's performing Fever and the girls were going crazy, so he teased them a little.
Fever? It wasn't only the girls, man. We've got to be very careful what we say these days. yeah, doing it with the big stand-up mic and swirling it around, and every time he said Fever, bang, he would pull it back towards him. And, you know, and it was great. And they would fall back. I mean, some of them were trying to run up, and the studio guards were, stadium guards were back to your seats. And then you'd see Elvis with this grin, this magnificent grin, and he'd do the bump again, and it'd start all over again. And look, man, he was having fun. He was having fun. You know, a lot of people in that mid-70s period were saying, well, you know, he looks bored. And this is, I'm not talking about dickheads, I'm talking about people who had seen him many times. You know, even that night after the show, Hedy and Fred were saying, well, wow, that was a sensational concert. And they'd seen many, many concerts. So that was a compliment, you know, in itself. But he just had such a wonderful time that night.
Well, it's great to hear that, and you know, I'm getting a bit of the chills just hearing you tell that story. I can never get enough of it. But you did mention before that you know, we're getting rumours about, you know, Elvis's health, etc. But was it still a shock to you what happened on August 16,
1977? Oh, God, you. I mean, when I saw the CBS TV special. Now, as you know, that was an amalgamation of two concerts. But I thought, you have got to be kidding. That's not the guy that I saw. So, yeah, I was stunned. I mean, he had gone down health-wise greatly in those few months. I mean, the CBS special was, what, June, July, when it was filmed.
Yeah, and he passed away six weeks later.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to get all these timelines, and obviously, you know, over the years I've read so many books and stories about what was going on. But back in 1977, yeah, you would have heard rumours, but you wouldn't have known exactly what was going on in Elvis. I mean, you would have heard he's still touring, so you think, oh, he must be okay.
Oh, yeah, well, look, my friends in San Francisco had seen him in Vegas after that, after the concert that I went to. They didn't report anything, you know, disturbing.
Mm. Well, it must have been a shock for a lot of Elvis fans. What do you remember about that time? And I know from reading some of the books, it was actually Elvis Month through RCA Victor out here, so there was lots of releases planned. But what was the reaction from, I know around the world what it was like, but what was it like out here in Australia?
In which regard?
Oh, was it all over the newspapers and things like that? I mean,
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, that day when I got the news, I immediately turned around. I didn't go to work. And I rang work and said, look, I won't be in. And, of course, in those days, I didn't have a silent number. So that telephone just rang hot. I had, radio stations, three or four different press groups coming around, doing shots and doing interviews, some nice, some not so nice. So to me, you know, for three or four days, that was a total blur.
I can only imagine what it would have been like, because they all would have rang you. I've read, you know, some reports of the day, and there's not too many that don't quote you in the article as well.
Yeah, well, I did. Look, it was a blur, and then I started getting phone calls left, right and centre, and I'm talking about from 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, from people, because my name was in the telephone book. And I mean, some of those wonderful people, and they were wonderful people, but give me a break. But some of them, the filth that came out of their mouth was absolutely disgusting. And I said, that's it. I'm getting a private number.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I can only imagine what that would have been like. Now, the fan club that you're involved in, before we actually talk about the club itself, they put a memorial in not long after that in the Melbourne General Cemetery, which is still there, and it is a fitting tribute to Elvis, I think.
You mean the one that I had put in there?
Yeah.
Well, it's still there, and the Melbourne General Cemetery have been great in the upkeep of it, and it's in their interest too because it's a big tourist attraction for them.
Yeah, I brought some of my friends to see it, that they were surprised that there was one here, and I said, well, I'm going to take you and show you.
Yeah, well, it was, as far as I know, it was first built anywhere in the world.
Exactly. And wasn't Johnny O'Keefe opening it for you?
Yeah, we got Johnny O'Keefe. Look, there was discussions between a group of us involved from various degrees, and some people, look, I won't mention their names because they are very nice people. Well, they're dead now, but they were very nice people in the entertainment world. And they declined for various reasons. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't because they didn't like Elvis. They did. And I turned around and I've gone, holy crap, Johnny O'Keefe's in town. And he was straight as Elvis. Gave him a call, meeting done. Deal delivered. And I honestly think he was he was definitely my choice. And I think he was the best choice because of his connection with rock and roll music. And like I said, in the 50s, he was Australia's Elvis.
Yeah, well, I've got a huge soft spot for Johnny O'Keefe. And even for anybody listening around the world that's not familiar with him, go on YouTube and have a look. This guy was an extremely talented rock and roll performer, wasn't he?
He was the wild one.
Join us next time for part 3 of our interview with Wayne Hawthorne, where we'll talk about lots of different things in the Elvis world, including some of the people that Wayne has met.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Elvis Cast. Subscribe or follow the show on your podcast platform of choice. Just search for Elvis Cast. All the links and contact information can be found on my website, elviscast.com.
If you'd like more information about this episode's special guest, check out the show notes in the description. Thanks for listening to the Elvis Cast.